Yeah, so since it's a group meeting, I thought I would hopefully keep on, I don't know, try to stay on an elementary level about the thing I was going to talk about. So I don't know. For some people, like, for example, if Sasha comes, you might be really bored, but some of you might not find it interesting enough. I don't know.
Well, then it should also be more conversational. So if Sasha comes, you and he can have a conversation.
Sure, you can converse. So okay, so what I plan to talk about is what I've called something like standard binomial theory for the affine Grassmannian in type A. But before saying anything about that, I thought I would just start by saying, what is standard binomial theory in the sort of like classical sense, which is just about finite dimensional Grassmannians, so like in the sense of Hodge. So, right. Let me just remind us all what that might be about. So this is all a pretty classical story, but just to spit it all out. So I'm just going to fix notation. So I'll let F be a field. Sorry, is this chalk visible, or is it breaking up a lot?
I can see it.
Sorry? You can see. OK, good. And I'm just going to write, for simplicity, I probably don't need this, but anyway, V to be the n-dimensional vector space over the field. And then just to remind you, I hope everyone knows, the Grassmannian of k-planes in n-dimensional space is just that. So we have sort of U contained inside V, such that U is the subspace k-dimensional. I'm just going to treat it naively here like a set. So, but of course, this is the scheme if we really want, or a variety. And so then we have the Plucker embedding. Which, of course, embeds this space inside a projective space of the kth exterior power of V, right, just taking a subspace to its kth power. As a line. And from this, we also have this tautological. Let me give this some name. I don't know. Iota or something. This line bundle, which I'll denote L, which is just the pullback of O1. So just the line which is spanned by that over every point. And what do we want to actually talk about is the coordinate ring, the homogeneous coordinate ring of this Grassmannian, sort of with respect to this embedding. So we can look at the homogeneous coordinate ring sort of R, which, right. So with respect to the embedding, so this is going to be some quotient. We could take the polynomial ring of functions on the vector space wedge KV, and then we're going to mod out by some ideal, some quadratic relations. A very old story. I don't know, since we have probably lots of time, I thought I would just go on a slight tangent, which is I personally never remember the Plucker relations very well. And I'm sorry, I also completely forgot to mention. So this is based on some joint work with Dinakar Muthiah, who was visiting not so long ago, and Odedia Kobe. So one of the things that came up in our work was it was helpful to have a slight reformulation of the Plucker relations, which I think should be better known than it seems to be. So this is sort of an aside. So let's just talk quickly about the Pluhar relations. I just can't resist because I find this a really fun topic somehow. So how can you reformulate the Pluhar relations in a way that, at least for me, is much easier to remember? Which is you choose a basis. So it's going to be about Clifford algebras. I don't know. Vi for V and a dual basis Vi star for V star. Then we can define operators which will generate a Clifford algebra. And these will act on the whole exterior algebra of V. Phi is going to be wedging with Vi, and Phi I star is going to be interior product. So Phi I applied to something, it's just Vi wedge that thing, and Phi I star is sort of this interior product with this dual vector. In other words, you contract it. And see these, oh yes. Right. These generate a Clifford algebra. And then you can write down the following sorts of things. So I'll write down the first one. There's a whole family of them, but first, something called omega 1, which is going to be the following expression. So you sum over I, and then you take phi I star, tensor phi I. So this you'll think of as an operator from the tensor square of this exterior algebra to, well, it's going to change the degree because the contraction will decrease the number of powers. So you sort of minus 1, and the other part will add. And more generally, you can look at something I'll call omega sub d, which is similar, but we're going to have d factors. So if we choose a bunch of increasing d indices, we can form psi I 1 star dot 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 psi I d star. And then the same order on the right-hand side, but no stars. Similar behavior, but now it's going to subtract d and add d. And just a comment, this actually you can compute as an endomorphism of this space. This is actually equal to d factorial times d. Oh, sorry, divide by d factorial. 1 over d factorial, the dth power of the first one. Come back to that point in a second, but what's the point of my aside? Actually, these operators give you all the relations for the Pluhar, for the Grassmannian. So, one thing also again. These are coordinate independent. You can check. It won't depend on which basis you chose. So. So then there's this theorem. I'm not exactly sure who to attribute to, but at least in the characteristic zero case, I've seen this in Katz or Katz-Peterson. I'm sure it was known to other people. And in the form that I'm writing right now, the only place I've seen it is in my paper with Dinakaran and Oded, but again, I think this must be known. So anyway, so the Pluhar relations. So what kind of system can we impose instead is you can take this operator on the tensor square and you can apply it to something wedged with tensor with itself. So here tau, I'm using some sort of standard notation, but tau is just some element of this exterior algebra. Oh, sorry. We want this for ger k n. So I should look at wedge k. So if we take something in wedge k, we can tensor it with itself, and then you can apply this operator. It's going to change the degrees, but that's fine. And we just require that they all vanish. So. Sorry?
So it's not enough to say that omega 1, does it?
Well, it depends what your characteristic is, that's all.
Ah, okay.
If you want characteristic 0, then omega 1's fine. And actually, that just follows from this fact here. But we had to divide by something. And so, yeah, the form that I'd seen this before was in Kat's book on infinite dimensional Lie algebras. He does the characteristic 0 version, but it turns out, yeah, you can soup it up to any characteristic at all. Anyway, I just find it easier to remember than personally, than regular Pluhar relations. These operators are pretty straightforward, so.
Yeah, a comment, Alex. This is in Edingoff's lectures on infinite dimensional Lie algebra.
Oh, great. Does he do the general? Perfect. Okay. Thanks. Surely someone knows this. Well, I'm not surprised it's Edingoff. Just another comment, and I guess hopefully this is sort of clear from it, but. Right now, this is not really written as a bunch of equations. Rather, we should sort of take all the components of this equation. Right? So really, what you might say is that this is a sort of vector-valued equation. So really, we need to contract this with something in the dual space to make sense of it, if you actually want to write some equations down. Let me draw a picture. So if you take wedge KV, you take tau here, I'm just going to map this diagonally into its square. So. And then we could apply this omega operator. Again, it will shift the exponents somehow. So far we've mapped into there. Now we can just contract with something in the dual. So if you take some, I don't know, alpha tensor beta, you could map this into the Brown field, where alpha is in the dual of this space, and beta is in the other one. So what's nice is this operator, omega d, doesn't depend on any coordinates. So when you actually want to write the Pluhar equations down, you just somehow contract it with whatever you want. You'll produce a ton of equations. So if you do this over all dual vectors, you'll get the Pluhar equations somewhere in there. It's going to be kind of a mess, but anyway, so yes, that was sort of an aside, since that doesn't have anything to do with standard binomials, but yeah, thanks for pointing out about anything else. Cool. So back to what we actually want to talk about was producing a basis for this homogeneous coordinate room. Standard binomial theory in this very classical picture. So first of all, it's easiest to make the combinatorics work if we do one change first. So we identify the standard. I still have this basis fixed in the background. So the standard basis for this dual space. So something here. Sorry, we're going to identify this with partitions lambda, which sit inside a box of size k times n minus k. And this is just so that, hopefully I didn't mix up the conventions here. So I'm going to identify this dual space with the k kth exterior power of the dual. So that's something like this. So here's the basis vector. And this will map to, I don't know if I got the conventions right, but anyway, something like ik minus k, ik minus 1 minus k minus 1. So I'm trying to produce a partition. I2 minus 2, I1 minus 1. Just for example, for, I don't know, wedge 2, C5, say, I guess C doesn't really matter. We would do something like E2 star wedge E5 star. This will map to, right. Well, K is 2, so we'll get partition 5 minus 2, 2 minus 1, whatever that is. Yeah?
Can I make a question about positive characteristics?
Yes.
So if you had been working with symmetric powers, I would have, like, made a fuss because all these identifications of kind of the symmetric power of a vector, like the dual of a symmetric power, the symmetric power of its dual, are
yeah.
sort of, you can do them for any particular basis, but they're not very equivariant for all the sort of groups that are naturally acting. But I vaguely think that exterior powers are a little bit better behaved.
Mm-hmm.
My question is kind of, how much better are they? Should I, like, can I really do all these identifications like that?
I believe so, yes.
Like it's a GLV equivariant identification?
Yeah, I think we'd have to just have to think slightly about how GLV is acting here. If it's exactly which action, but it shouldn't be anything complicated.
I mean, another version of my question is that in positive characteristic, there's sort of two different symmetric powers.
You mean the divided power and the...
Yeah.
Only
two different exterior powers.
I believe the answer is no.
Okay.
But somehow offhand now I don't remember why it's so definitive. Sorry. So just wanted to point out, of course, that it's supposed to sit inside a 2x3 box, and this partition does. And of course, we're looking at this part here. And you can extend it to an isomorphism, or bijection, rather. OK. And then with this description, yeah, sorry to not fully answer your question. With this description, it's easy to write down a basis. So if we look in the coordinate ring of this exterior power itself, oh, sorry, I want to just introduce some notation. We have lambda there. I'm going to call this P sub lambda for Pluker. So this P lambda, if you can think of, is an element there. And we can look at the set S M for standard monomial sub D, say. So this is products of these Pluker coordinates. Exactly D of them. And there's just one condition, which is where all these lambdas are contained inside this box. They just have to have a sort of flag condition. Lambda 1 contained in lambda 2 contains all the way down. So you just have to have these sort of nested partitions that get smaller. You can choose it to be increasing too, it doesn't really matter. Okay. And the other thing you could define is SMD of tau, which is the same, but with one extra condition is that tau contains lambda 1. So where tau is some other partition that sits inside the same box. And somehow then we're done. We have this nice theorem of, well, essentially Hodge. I believe the characteristic zero version is due to Hodge. And after that would possibly be
Sashaji.
And others. So let's just state in a few parts. So we have some set here. And just to remind you, our homogeneous coordinate ring R, it's some quotient of here. And the claim is that this set gives it basis of the degree d part. So the image of Sm lower d gives a basis for the degree d part of the homogeneous coordinate ring. And somehow it's just all coming from this simple combinatorics of partitions. And this by itself is maybe not so amazing, but you can say more, which is that if you take this other set, Sm d sub tau, which depended on some auxiliary partition, this will correspond to the homogeneous coordinate ring of a Schubert variety. So forgive. I don't know what notation to give it. R d tau. This is the homogeneous coordinate ring of a Schubert variety x tau inside this Grassmannian. I didn't define the Schubert variety, but you take orbits for the Borel and you take their closures for a natural space inside, but typically very singular. And so this is saying that not only is this basis kind of a nice basis for the coordinate ring of the Grassmannian itself, but it's compatible with every single Schubert variety. And actually, even more than that, you can say exactly what the defining ideal of this Schubert variety is in terms of the Pluger coordinates. It's like basically the same constraint. The ideal of the Schubert variety is exactly generated by the p, just linear p lambdas, where tau does not contain lambda. So, sorry. Here we had just nested partitions. Here we had partitions which are sitting inside lambda, the first one. So it's sort of imposing some constraint. And here we just say, is anything which doesn't satisfy you, put in the ideal, and that exactly cuts it down. So it's kind of amazing. So in other words, these generators are sort of perfectly compatible with the whole picture. Yeah. And so this is nice in and of itself, but you can get some more out of it. Let's see. Well, you can get a lot of algebraic geometric statements out of it. I'm not sure whether people are interested in it or not. But one is projective normality. It takes a little bit of work, but roughly speaking, it's saying that we can say for Gur Kn or any Schubert variety, which means, in essence, two things. First, that I'll form in for this version. So x tau is normal, which is the more technical conditions, meaning that it's integrally closed, the coordinate ring. But more interestingly,
me.
Second, that we can take sections
of this line window.
So we started with the Plucker embedding into this projective space. And we have the line bundle here, just O of 1. Maybe I should write it that way. But. And there's a restriction map onto the super variety or the Grassmannian itself. And part of this projective normality is that this map is always surjective. So and in fact, this piece is exactly you take the coordinate ring of the Schubert variety and you take its deep piece and it will be this piece. So for those familiar with projective geometry, it can be that this Grassmannian is sitting inside this projective space and so are these Schubert varieties. It could have been that when you restrict sections of the bundles, you don't hit everything. Right? There could be some higher cohomology that needs to come into play. But here it says that that doesn't happen. And it just comes from the combinatorics of this picture, basically. Another nice thing that this tells you, this whole standard monomial setup, is that if you take a Schubert variety and intersect it with another Schubert variety, the intersection is really well behaved because the bases are all compatible. So this will be actually reduced, for example. So sometimes when you intersect two subvarieties, they might intersect kind of non-transversely or something. This doesn't happen here. And again, that just comes from the combinatorics basically right away. And similarly, you can get other nice properties. But it gives a nice blend of algebraic geometry, combinatorics, and just straight algebra, which still quite remarkable. Just one other comment before I move to something else. Jeez. This is all true in any characteristic whatsoever. So, in fact, it's just true over, it could be true if you wanted to work with coefficients being the integers or something. So no matter what the field was. I don't know if anyone had seen standard monomials before. It's a pretty picture, I think. Let me just stop there for a second. Any questions about that so far? So my plan was to the reason I mention all this standard monomial stuff is I just wanted to illustrate it in this classical setting, because especially these properties here and the compatibility with Schubert varieties I mentioned is sort of motivating what I'm about to talk about. And these properties are exactly the sort of things I want in a more in a different setting. So I thought I'd say that before I move on. So, right. So after that sort of extended classical thing, let me actually say what I wanted, what my sort of goals are. So the replacement is to study a different embedding, which is something about the affine Grassmannian for SLN. And the embedding, instead of That's almost the same, but it won't look the same. Initially, it's mapping it to some projective space, which I've called the vector space itself F, which is, I don't know if this is a good terminology or not, but some sort of fermionic Fock space. So, without saying exactly what those are yet, you can maybe guess what I want to say, which is I want to study the coordinate ring of the affine Grassmannian, whatever that is, in terms of sort of variables here and try and produce standard binomials which are compatible with each other in the same sort of way. And so, yeah. For this embedding. Before I say that, so I think maybe everyone, I'm not sure. Okay. Probably everyone knows what these are already, but I should say one thing, which is there already is a standard binomial theory. In fact, not just for the affine Grassmannian of SLM, but for the any sort of partial flag variety for a Katz-Moody group or finite type. So Littleman and others defined a notion of standard binomial for any Katz-Moody group. Situation. So actually, you want to look at homogeneous spaces, G mod P, or this is a Katz-Moody and that's a parabolic. And standard binomials only make sense for some sort of projective embedding, so you have to embed this in something. But this works completely in general, but it's not very computable, or at least that's my opinion. So,
because the combinatorics are too bad, or because there's like you don't have good Gardner bases to.
I think it's. I would say it's mostly the combinatorics. But. Maybe I just don't understand it well enough.
The goal is to construct standard binomial theory. Is there like a definition of what you want, or do you mean by standard binomial just a basis?
For here?
Yes.
No, I do mean something more specific. But
so, okay. Can you say it? I mean, what exactly you want?
Yeah, I should extend it a little bit more. So let me just, yeah, fair enough. actually, this fits into a slightly bigger picture. Yes. Yes, it's sort of related to the bosonization. Yeah. Where you sort of taking some normally outer products of the fermions.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry. The thing I sort of slightly more have in mind is really this is sitting from some bigger diagram where you have some other space called the Sato Grassmannian. There's actually some sort of embedding like this. So the affine Grassmannian sits in the Sato Grassmannian. Sato Grassmannian sits in this projective space. And actually, if you just erase the affine Grassmannian here, this piece is quite easy to understand, though I haven't said what it is. This is some limit of finite dimensional Grassmannians. So the story of this embedding is exactly what I just talked about, but you kind of take the limit.
Sato Grassmannian was about bosonization.
Yes. And the affine Grassmannian itself sits inside here. So what you might say is we want sort of to take the standard binomial theory of the Sato Grassmannian and kind of look inside there and try and get basis for the affine Grassmannian's coordinate ring. Hopefully one that's compatible with Schubert varieties, among other things. I don't know if that answers the question. The Sato Grassmannian is you take the sort of, what's it called, vacuum vector here, and you take its orbit under GL infinity, and it's that set.
Right. So for the Sato Grassmannian, was for Grassmannian is just one Fermi fermion, or is n fermion? I mean, do you need to take n copies of the?
Normally just one.
But in GR of SLN, you'll need n copies?
Yes, yeah.
Of the...
That's right. Somehow the underlying vector space you can identify. I'll give it in a second.
So if you take Lorentz series to the power n, if you only think about this as a sort of topological vector space, then it doesn't depend on n. If you don't care about the structure of a module over Lorentz power series, then...
I understand.
Doesn't matter what n is.
Yeah, you can sort of
yeah, of course,
go level by level.
And one fermion is not different if you have it here as well.
Can I ask a very naive question?
Yes.
You haven't told us what fermionic clock space means for you, but
yeah.
What it usually means for me looks very much like a kind of full like it doesn't tend to look like a particular power. You were taking like wedge some specific number of the vector space.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe I should ask my question again when you tell us what all these objects are, but like.
Sure. It sort of contains, essentially all of them,
okay.
Nested in some funny way. Maybe it'll be clear when I write it down. But. Yeah, I have to say, I'll probably be increasingly sketchy. One, because although the ideas are not that complicated, it becomes technical to write them down, or just annoying to write them down. Maybe just two comments before I say anything else. Somehow the idea to study this particular embedding of the affine Grassmannian of SLN in that Fock space. It's been studied by lots of people, but more recently by the idea to study was from a paper of Kreiman and others. First time I've ever written that acronym. So one of the things that they were motivated to study this problem, and the same thing with us, is to study ideals of nilpotent orbit closures. So, orbit closures. So if you look inside just the Lie algebra GL, n, and you take an orbit, a nilpotent orbit, and you take its closure. Sorry. A priori, this doesn't seem to have anything to do with the affine Grassmannian, but an observation that goes back to Lustig is that these things are related to Schubert varieties. So I won't spell this out in too much detail. But if you had a nice standard monomial theory where you could actually connect what your generators are with relations and functions on here, you could actually figure out the ideal that defines something like a nilpotent orbit closure. And these things have been studied, especially in characteristic zero by Veyman. But if you had, again, a nice theory which worked in any characteristic, like here, you might be able to say things which are just true in any characteristic whatsoever. So somehow it seems a little roundabout to go study the affine Grassmannian to study nilpotent orbits, but that's one idea. So, I don't know if that excites anyone except me, but there we go. Okay, so. Yeah. Let me at least try to say what this. Yes.
This probably has something to do with the answer to my question because if I orbit closures has something to do with closure two or four orbits in the Grassmannian.
Yes.
So therefore, when you're thinking about the standard monomial, whatever they are, you want a basis which is kind of compatible.
With G of O orbits, yes.
With G of O orbits.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that would be a, would have been a better thing to say.
Is it like the only thing you want, or is it the, about the basis, or is there anything else you want?
That's a good question. I don't know. That is one of the main things I want. Okay. So, of course, some sort of cast of this. So, let me use some standard notation. I'll let K be the field of the Roth series with coefficients in F, and O be our series. So let's at least, maybe 15 minutes. Let's look at the Sato-Grassmannian. So the Sato-Grassmannian, at least as a set, what is it? So it's supposed to be something which looks like a limit of Grassmannians. And one way to achieve that is to sort of look at subspaces of this vector space here, or sort of think of this as like a Tate vector space. So you want to take things which are kind of compatible with O. So I mean, to be a little bit more precise, you look at subspaces, just vector subspaces of this huge vector space. So this is a, first of all, it's an F subspace. And second condition you can impose is that it contains some translates of O. It's sort of wedged between two of them. So if you look at this U, you can put inside it some translate of this O sitting in here, and vice versa, it's contained inside some translative O. So one of the one element of this Sato-Grassmannian is just this O itself. Thought of as this subspace here. Or generally you could take any sort of power of T and put them in front of O and get the point of the Sato-Grassmannian. So it's just subspaces of this infinite dimensional space which look like O, essentially, or differ sort of in finite dimensional stuff. And for that reason, this is a union of Grassmannians. So how did I write it? So if we just vary, think of a fixed N, you'll get a bunch of Grassmannians, which is the things which are wedged between these two pieces. So we just take that vector space. So that might be one thing you mean by Sato-Grassmannian. And you can also make sense of this as an in-scheme pretty easily. I mean, well, this sort of makes it clear. Okay. Okay. At the risk of avoiding some subtleties, this fermionic Fock space F is also sort of a limit or co-limit. So this is a big union. You sort of, this is compatible with Blücher embeddings. So this is some sort of limit of exterior powers. I'll be a little sloppy. But slightly more explicitly, you could think people usually write this as this semi-infinite wedges. So elements are like, well, again, it's a subspace of K, so usually you would write it as some sort of increasing wedge of powers of S, for example. But kind of infinite in one direction, where these indices are strictly increasing, and they're sort of eventually constant, or eventually increasing by one at a time. So. what's going on there. So what you'd like to do is you have a subspace of this infinite dimensional space. It looks a lot like O, so in particular it has some basis. What you'd like to do is just take a basis and sort of wedge them all together. So you'll get some countable wedge, but that doesn't exactly make sense. Really what you should do is choose sort of the standard basis for this smaller translative T of O. So that you can think of as the tail of this expression. So eventually this increasing part is exactly the basis for this. And sort of only the finite start of this expression is actually the basis for the quotient of this.
This S is T?
Sorry? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. For some reason in my notes I used S. Yes, thank you. Yeah. Maybe not the best way to label it, but. Okay. And I don't know how much more interesting I'm going to say. Well, maybe we should at least say the thing that was discussed, which is how is this related to the affine Grassmannian? The affine Grassmannian doesn't quite look like this, but. One other thing, yeah. So you can generalize some things from the finite dimensional case to here, of course. Just a limit. Anyway. So the other object we're talking about is the affine Grassmannian. Here we really want to use the lattice picture, so it's sort of type A specific. So instead of what was going on here with vector subspaces, we look at submodules. So here we might look at L, which is a subset of K to the N, which is satisfies the property. So L is in O submodule. We want lattices which are sort of full. So if you take O and tensor with K, you should get K to the N. And some various conditions. The third one is just saying that the lattice is sort of balanced. There's not too many high powers of T versus low powers of T. Sort of you get everything from, oh, sorry, not K. Oh. We have a closed embedding of this affine Grassmannian into the Sato Grassmannian. In fact, it only maps into one piece, really, which is where there's some extra condition about dimensions here, but the charge is fixed, but it doesn't matter so much. So this comes from identifying, as Sasha said, that we identify first, we can identify k to the n with k as vector spaces. So this is a countable dimension vector space. This is also a countable dimension, so there isn't many isomorphisms between them. The sort of one we want is if we take like if we choose some standard basis for k the n and we look at the powers of t on them, you map this to something like t to the n r plus I. So what's going on? You can look at the various powers of t. So maybe this is t to the 0 and t to the 1. So because you've taken this nth direct sum, over every power of t, you have all the sort of standard basis vectors for f to the n. And then you sort of to get this isomorphism by kind of running down, counting like this. So you're kind of looping back and forth. Not a very good picture. Anyway, you just identify them. And what you can do is just apply this isomorphism to your lattice. So you take L, it will go to some L tilde, I don't know what that is, and that defines an embedding. Right. Any questions about that? Maybe this is familiar. So let me say something maybe more interesting, I hope. Okay. Actually, I should have kept that. Okay, so let me state the following conjecture, which is due to the list prime and actually by Magyar. So, okay, I'm gonna draw the picture first and then I'll fill it in. We have this Gur SLN. So we have the embedding we just described. This Sato Grassmannian is a big union of Grassmannians, so again, it has this Blücher embedding. And there's actually some diagram that goes like this. So how do you define this? This is supposed to be about the projective geometry of the affine Grassmannian of SLN sitting inside this Fock space. So if you look at I'll call it I. This is the.
Wait, this is not the conjecture, is it?
Sorry? Oh, no, this is not a conjecture. The conjecture is that this is a Cartesian.
Oh, the fact that it's commutative is obvious.
Yes, yes. Yeah, what I'm about to say is you just. Sorry, I'm giving too many details and probably not enough idea of what's going on. So here you have some projective embedding. And what you can do is you can look at all the linear functions which vanish on this sub. And you can look at the whatever it is they cut out. So you have some linear functions here which vanish on this affine Grassmannian. And you can look at the linear subspace which they cut down to, whatever that is. So this is just a vector subspace of here. And then you'll have this diagram. And the claim is that actually this is Cartesian. So, yeah, so maybe in so many words.
In other words, that this Grassmannian is cut out by the equations of the Sato Grassmannian and by linear equations.
Exactly, yes. So it's cut out in this projectivization of Fock space by quadratic Blücher equations plus some linear equations defining whatever this linear space is. That you have the Sato Grassmannian inside there. You can forget this for the moment. You could take the fiber product of this with this. In other words, the intersection, and you should get there should be equal to the fiber product. That's the conjecture.
And is it obvious set theoretically? Only it is. Right?
I think so. Yeah. But I was going.
Yeah. So the same as that one and two together define a reduced system of operations, right?
Yes. Yeah. And. The reason I especially mentioned the conjecture, sorry, I should say, we proved this, but this won't help too much with what I'm about to say. So myself, in Karn are dead, the conjecture is true. I should stop writing and say more. So what you can hope to do then is something like the Santogras money inside this huge projective space. Again, we want to say something about some sort of basis. So this has a nice standard monomial theory. It's just you can say exactly what the sections of line bundles on the Santogras money look like. They look exactly like the finite dimensional case, but in a limit. And then you can further cut that down by some linear equations. And you can hope to say something exactly about what the sections of line bundles on the affine Grassmannian look like, and in such a way that's compatible with the picture. If that makes any sense. Right. That's the idea.
So can I ask you a question? So in general, in a five-dimensional case, this is general theorem of Poisson, right? That if you can see this Bluger embedding for any partial plug variety of any group, then it's cut out by quadratic equations. Brain representation, you can see the same as that. If you can see the any say reducible representation, and you can see the orbit of the highest weight line,
right,
in the pre-corresponding projective space, and then get out by quadratic equations.
Yes.
So the problem is that there's no analog of this theorem in the Gasmuti case, or
there's that issue, but I think that actually still is fine. I believe that Katz-Peterson proves that still holds. So, you should expect quadratic linear because maybe your space is too big to start with.
Right. But so it means that somehow if you can see this, the upper horizontal arrow, you know that the fine Grassmannian is cut out by quadratic equations.
Yes. So my other comment was going to be, there is one obstacle there, which is I think that's only characteristic zero. And
okay,
here you want full.
Yeah, lots of men to get this thing, but in characteristic
but yes.
zero, so we know that the equations are quadratic.
Yes.
And but the problem is that we don't know that these are the same quadratic equations.
No, I think you can also show that. I believe that this is more or less sketched out in, say, Katz, older
book. So you're saying that in this case the conjecture is clear?
Yes. Maybe I should say, the other thing you might say for those who know this stuff is, say, this like 1980s sort of soliton integrable systems theory. This is like the KP equations, and this is the NKDV equations. So I think in that case, this picture is actually quite well understood. But if you tried to go into an arbitrary characteristic, it becomes kind of complicated. It's not clear that it will still work.
I see.
And part of the hope is that by studying that, you might have a better sense of it.
I thought this conjecture was not null in characteristic zero, but at least the conjecture that...
The quadratic equation?
Maybe a conjecture about the orbit closures. That's about it. Okay, sorry.
That's the, but that I can't say anything about it. Maybe I'll say one more thing. I feel like I'm trailing off on tangents or something, but actually, this is related to what I was just saying. So in the 1980s, especially in this sort of, this integrable systems, integrable hierarchies world, people were studying like Sato, after whom this Sato-Grassmannian is named, the relation between this embedding here and, say, this hierarchy of soliton equations, the KP hierarchy, which really, if you write down this, what I've been talking about, if you write it down appropriately, you can interpret the equations, the quadratic Blücher equations, as some PDEs. And that PDE system is it's a system of PDEs, and the first one is this so-called KP equation. And if you do it here, you get something called the NKDV hierarchy, whatever that is. So it was quite well studied back then, and sort of generalizing that in the 80s, people were also studying sort of higher level. So this is somehow related. So this picture is related to the sort of level one irreducible vacuum module. don't know if that's reasonable terminology, but over SLN hat. So this is affine Lie algebra. And so this is where these are coming from a little bit, or at least this top arrow. But something else you can study are, it's not just level one, but higher level. And sort of one hope of whatever I'm calling standard monomial theory here was that the sort of basis we would produce would be related to some of the constructions people were working on, say, in the late 80s, which are not phrased quite this way. But my hope is the sort of constructions of higher level modules, which are coming from sort of tensor products of Fox bases, by connecting them a little bit more, I think, with the geometry, you might say things about like G of O orbit closures inside the affine Grassmannian, which a priori may not have been obvious. Maybe that's wishful thinking, I'm not sure. So, not sure what else I might add. Any more questions?
So, sorry, somehow when you're doing this, right, you're using a preferred embedding, you know, you're picking a representation you like. But if you took higher level modules, oh, you just mean V of L lambda zero? Some higher L?
Yes, that's right.
You'd be getting like an affine partial flag, right?
Yes, yeah, sorry. And from the geometric point of view, we're just taking tensor powers of the line bundle. Mm-hmm. But yes, it should be where here is supposed to get the basic representation, you should get irreducible, but higher level. Still vacuum.
So do you think this conjecture is true in that case as well?
In the partial flag variety? Or affine flag variety?
I mean, it'd be interesting for partial flag varieties as well, but I just mean the higher level for the affine Grassmannian.
Can you say that again? So put D here or something?
I mean, if you take L times lambda zero.
Right. And put this into the cyber embedding or something?
Right.
This
is that, is the state, is everything still the same?
The thing is really, you take the vacuum module and you twist it by the element of the affine Grassmannian. You get the new module.
Oh.
These fermions, which
oh.
Is still isomorphic to the original one.
I'm not sure about the twisting part. Here it's something pretty simple-minded. So I'm not sure. That might be true, but I'm not sure. From this point of view, I mean, the point of view I was thinking before, putting the L in is more like taking these higher tensor powers of the bundle, but somehow all the equations were still imposed in the linear part, so they should carry all the way up, I guess.
Then you have kind of two interesting levels of linear equations, because you have the equations that cut down from the tensor power of the Fox space to the tensor power of V lambda zero, and then the equations in V lambda zero that cut down.
Yes. So I think the claim is that it should just be the quadratic equations between pairs of Fox spaces, the Plucker ones, plus the linear ones on a single Fox space should cut you all the way down. Somehow just imposing the original linear stuff plus quadratic stuff was enough.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to do it without doing that and just start immediately at L, I'm not sure. Any other questions? Okay, I guess I'll stop there.